Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the show. Vassos is here.
Aloha.
Rachel's here.
Greetings.
And David Baddiel is going to be here in a bit. Tell us about David, Rachel.
Well, you might think David is a stand-up comedian. No, put that to one side. Put TV presenting to the bottom of his CV, because officially David Baddiel, as far as we're concerned, is a children's author, because he's written not one, not two, but 10 children's books, and he's here to talk to us.
Yeah, he's now selling his books in the millions. I mean, he doesn't sell them personally.
No, but stand
today,
outside.
What I want to ask him about, as well as this new book, which is three books in one, I read the first story, which I loved, starring Alfie and his mad, this mad sort of secret child, grandma childminder who has all these magic spells.
I like brilliant.
He doesn't want a granny childminder with magic spells.
No,
amazing.
I'd like one.
So I read that, but I want to ask him today for the first time about Newman and Baddiel. Do you remember Newman and Baddiel?
Yeah.
Massive. I mean, a lot of the people who work on the show won't even know, but Rob Newman and David Baddiel, they were the first comedy act in the world to play an arena. In the world.
Wow.
This is way ahead of Dave Chappelle and Seinfeld and Peter Kay. They were the first people to do it. And I remember them doing it, saying they were going to do it. And we thought, well, that's not going to work. Little did we know. There's another one to add to the list. Yeah. Do you remember when the internet came out? I was like, no, this isn't
yeah, you did.
Bricks and
flash
clicks.
Flash in the pan.
It's not going to work. So Mae Muller wasn't very happy at coming next to last at Eurovision, but she was a bit happier than the Germans, who came 26th. Look how they don't look happy at all, do they?
And the thing is, because they're not happy in bright red latex, yeah, shiny latex, it makes their non-happiness look even more unhappy.
Because they're wearing these full-on Eurovision fun outfits, yes, which was part of their act, of course. And they look great, by the way, but it's not a good unhappy look, that, is it? I don't think so.
Like less. Toddlers at a pass a parcel.
They're saying that the real star of Eurovision, I think it was fantastic. It was the most watched Eurovision of all time. And I think that I thought the whole production, the BBC's production, was amazing. Liverpool, what a host city. Clearly, it was a week-long party. It's probably still going on. Graham Norton's show on Sunday right here on Virgin Radio was amazing. Listen again to that, because he had all the Eurovision juice. But Hannah Waddingham and Sam Ryder. Sam Ryder's on this show playing live for us on Friday, a couple of mornings' time. I can't wait. Can't believe it, actually. And Hannah Waddingham, along with the rest of the hosts, our own Graham Norton and everybody else, everybody's claiming that they now discovered Hannah Waddingham first. Clemmie's claiming it in The Sun. Lady called Polly in The Times saying, I saw her first, she's mine, she's mine. She's knocking on the door of 50, Hannah Waddingham. And we know she's a great actress. She's an amazing singer. She's brilliant on the telly. She's great in film. She's great on the dramatic stage in theatre. And now she can just rock a worldwide television live broadcast. What can't she do, this lady? It's amazing, isn't she?
It's incredible.
Yeah, totally incredible. Has she been on Taskmaster?
No.
Because she's qualified, isn't she?
She could do a special. She's not a comedian.
She's quite funny.
She's quite funny, but she's a comedy actor.
Oh.
Got to be a comedian.
Really? Got to be.
Mostly. They always say Richard Osmond is the only contestant who wasn't officially a comedian.
So you don't then?
Well, he's the exception, proves the rule.
Okay, well, she could be the second exception that reproves the rule in case people didn't see the first exception.
I'll have a word.
Farewell, My Little Leicester Vipers. So, Sybil is no longer going to be in Fawlty Towers. John Cleese is rewriting it, and he apparently hasn't, but Basil has a love child with a guest.
And is that
Secret
his
daughter
actual,
comes back.
His real daughter in real life who's playing that character?
I just read that line. Okay. What else is going down? This story about Elon Musk. Elon Musk ended up on Monday, I don't think he knew it, but he was in the Elysee Palace with President Macron talking about Le Tesla Magnifique. But I'm not sure he knew where he was, because on Saturday, there's a picture of him at a rave in Los Angeles. On Sunday, he's in a nightclub in Mexico. There you go. Wow. And a few hours later, he's in Paris, in France, talking to...
Maybe he does that thing. You know, like John McEnroe comes over and he just stays on New York time. Well, if you're having a rave overnight, uh-huh. and then a party overnight. So if you come to Paris, it feels like the
he's
night.
He's on a roll.
He's absolutely the next thing.
Well, this is all since, you know, he's clearly, because he announced the new CEO of Twitter, didn't he, at the weekend? This lady called Ms. Yekaterina. And so she's now in charge and he's doing the Macarena while Yekaterina's bossing the office. I mean, that's what he's done. He's like, thank goodness we've got some. Can I have a couple of days off now? Right, I'm going to go for it. You know, he's got a plane. Yeah. You know, we are lucky to grab a cab now again. He's got his own plane. So he's like, it's literally, where to next? Where to next, Mr. Musk? Paris.
See if Manuel's right.
Give him Manuel a call. James.
40 Towers again.
James Coburn is back in town and he's back outside his favourite boozer. In Premier Hill. I've been to that boozer with James. It is our favourite pub in Primrose Hill. And he's back there on Saturday like nothing happened after 8 years of smashing it on telly in the States. I love it. I love people doing well. I'm really pleased for you all. If you're doing well, congratulations. So the email thing. So here you go. So when you check in your emails and your texts and all this kind of, you know, I don't want to patronise you, but somebody told me something. This very clever neurologist told me this at the weekend. The thing is, when you're put on alert, when you put yourself on red alert, or you receive a text or an email, and it's the heading is like, oh, it's off this person, oh, it's to do with that, and you go, oh, and it's almost always all right anyway, you know. But just clicking on your emails, you know, if you're thinking, oh, what's the bank statement going to say? Oh, it's that time of the month for this. Oh, I wonder how so and so is that sorted out yet? You don't, and all those thoughts can be in you just clicking on your email. All right. Now the thing about that is, what happened? That is part of your fight or flight. It just is. It's part of your amygdala. It's part of your lizard brain, your reptile brain. You're thinking, I'm going to be eaten brain. That's what happens there because it's a threat, right? And so what? So in the first second of that happening, adrenaline or epinephrine or norepinephrine, as they call it in the States, is created in your bloodstream. And that's what you, that's the super energy that makes you be able to lift a car. You know, when a child, you know, you hear all these stories, this superhuman strength, because that's a real thing. That happens within a second, right? So that all happens, that rush happens in a second. That's when you feel like a bit sick or a bit energized or a bit, one of those. The next 5 seconds, you get cortisol, because cortisol lasts a bit longer. So the second gets you up the tree, and the 5 seconds of cortisol gets you another 30 seconds. And then after that, you get different chemicals because your body's really clever, because it's they think, oh, hang on a minute, I'm now being chased by the lion for 2 minutes. All right, you need the most optimal fuel supply I can give you for the 2 minutes. And then you sort of going up, oh no, what else we got in the tank? Give me 30 minutes of this. That kind of stuff, right? So when you look at an email or a text, that all that happens anyway, and you think, well, I'll just bunch them together, I'll just cluster them. Well, that's a very good idea, because it's not about what happens when you look at them, but it takes you 20 minutes to come down from that every time it happens. So say you get 3 or 4 texts in a day, or 3 or 4 emails in a day. You think, well, I've only got 4 emails today, so I can check them when they... I'm only expecting 4 emails a day. I'm a 4 email a day kind of person. I'll get one in the morning. I'll get one at lunchtime. I'll get one in the afternoon. And I'll just check one on the way home before I get home. The thing there is, though, you've got 80 minutes of this biochemical come down. If you check 30 emails at once, you still only get the 20-minute come down. The 120-minute come down. That's why if you check your emails and your texts all day, your life is a nightmare, but you don't know why. Because you're filling it up with this chemical process every time you do that. Therefore, if you cluster them, you bunch them together, you bundle them together, it's much better for your well-being, for your actual health, your mental health, your physical health, your general health. It is miles better. And if you do it at 9 o'clock in the morning, if you have a normal working day, 9 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that gives you the biggest window within your day to have 2 of those come downs. So there's, and it sounds silly, you think, really? No, it will change your life. If you haven't seen that performance by Loreen from Sweden, who won Eurovision, her second win, just watch it. I mean, she just owned everything. So it was her night. It was definitely Sam Ryder's night, and it was definitely Hannah Waddingham's night. And there's more people claiming Hannah Waddingham now. So Pete in Stokes says, I first saw Hannah Waddingham in the TV series Benidorm in 2013. She was brilliant in that. I didn't know she was in that even, because I've never seen it. But lots of people claiming that they saw her first. You want to have a word with David Baddiel about similar, because David Baddiel's on the show in a bit.
So David Baddiel is coming on the show later today, and he was in something back in the early 90s called the Mary Whitehouse Experience with Rob Newman and Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis. And that, I came to the Mary Whitehouse Experience and was a big fan when it was on the telly. I think it was on weekly on BBC Two. But it originally was on the radio, and you could not talk to people about the Mary Whitehouse Experience without them saying, oh, no, no. What, did you come to it when it was on the telly? No, 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 I was the OG. I was back when it was on radio, I used to like it. So very similar with Hannah Waddingham.
Who was first to the party? Yeah. So I don't mind if I'm last to the party, yeah. Do you? Because if you're last to the party, you're only the current last.
Yeah.
You're just the next to the party, aren't you? I was 4 years late to Breaking Bad, but it doesn't matter.
They used to have this thing where they they would have two history professors discussing history, but then they disagree, and then they just start insulting each other, and so it looked like a crusty, dusty history programme. And then they go, you see that bit of bogey on the end of your finger, and then you wipe it on the floor. That's you, that is.
I love that one.
See, a lot of people now, especially the kids that work on the show who are 22, 23, even like, you know, 30, 31.
I'd forgotten about That's You, That Is.
They will never realise that David Baddiel used to be in a sketch show, used to play characters and was really good at it, because he just doesn't do anything like that anymore. So then he sort of transitioned to fantasy football, and now he's an author. And he makes films still, and he makes fantastic documentaries. But that's what he used to do with Rob Newman. To great aplomb, they used to win all the awards. They played arenas. They played Wembley Arena. It's amazing. Stephen Southsea says, a super tip from our super listeners. Are you ready? Here we go. It's that kind of Tuesday. I think Tuesday should be like this. It should be Check-In Tuesday, Super Tips Tuesday, Life Hack Tuesday. Hi, Chris and the team. Did you know you can cancel free trials as soon as you sign up for them and you still get the trial? I didn't know that. If I try something, I sign up and cancel it at the same time. If I fancy sticking with it, I get plenty of emails reminding me my trial has nearly ended. So if you sign up for... There's a very famous one-month trial, isn't there? You know the one I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah. It begins with year and ends in YouTube.
Okay.
And there's another one that starts with spurt and ends in Otify.
Okay.
Do you know that one?
Yes, I'm aware.
The Sherlock Holmes is out there. You may be cottoning on to what I'm saying. But no, apparently, this is... Steve says you sign up for the month trial and you immediately cancel it, you still get the month's trial.
That's very clever, Steve.
Martin Lewis would be proud of that one.
He would be.
Wouldn't he? Steve says, I switched to only opening my emails four times a day a few years ago, and it changed my life. I didn't know about the fight, flight, freeze impact. It just meant I wasn't interrupted every time I got notified an email arrived and felt compelled to look at it. Well, Steve, thank you for that. It's interesting, isn't it? Because you cut your email checking down to four times a day. And you probably felt really good about that. And you should pat yourself on the back about that. But just cut it down to two. What difference does it make between four and two? You know, up to four, not much. You know, you're still going to be pretty informed if you half that time. But how much is it going to help your well-being? 1,000x, 1,000 times. Vassos, you have a little useful note on this.
I just want to accessorize it. To help you do it, actually, just turn all of your notifications off. They used to be called alerts, but they changed the name to notifications because it sounds less alerty. But if you turn them all off, WhatsApp, text, email, perhaps leave your phone ringer on, but how often do people phone you? And then you're not drawn into your phone to go and check them every time something arrives.
Right, and just the last one on this for now. If anybody's got anything useful to add, please do. 8722, start your text with the Virgin. You know, Steve there talking about opening his emails four times a day, and before that it was more, and he didn't realise that it's about the 20-minute come down of checking something that is potentially threatening, even though most things aren't. If they are potentially threatening, they have the same effect as if they were, as far as your biochemistry is concerned. If you get used to this, this feeling, what happens? Here's the really weird thing. Here's what happens. Because you are now spending most of your day discombobulated, because you're in your fight or flight post-adrenaline, post-epinephrine, post-cortisol state that you're not aware of, after 20 minutes, that all calms down and you feel a sense of calm. But because it's no longer your usual modus operandi, you feel discomfort in the calm. So actually, you start to check things again. It's really strange. It works the other way. It's a negative spiral, so don't do it. Don't do it. If you don't, I mean, do what you want. I'm just saying, it's helpful.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He's a comedian, a presenter, and an absolutely prolific author. His 10th kids book, Only Children, Three Hilarious Short Stories, is out now. So stand by, everyone, and get ready to befeel the Bazeel of David Baddiel.
Nice, Bassos. Yeah,
brilliant. Befeel the Bazeel.
Yeah. It's a Tuesday.
Well, yeah, Bazeel. What
Seriously,
does that mean?
I don't take Bazeel. It. Yeah. Zeal, Bazeel. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, David, feel my Bazeel.
You and I exchanged my first ever cycle to pavement high five the other day.
Did we actually touch?
No, we didn't. We missed.
But it was basically a high five. It was very exciting.
We went for it, didn't
we? I was actually coming out of a rival radio organisation, and you said, hello, and I said, I'm coming to see you. Yeah, that was it.
Almost apologetically, like, I'm coming to see you too.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll be with you soon. You were on a Brompton.
I was on a Brompton.
Yeah, yeah, and you looked good. And
Thank you, mate.
Yeah, and it was very, very brief.
It was brief, but I enjoyed it.
No, it was a connection.
And I thought about it, you know, after we passed it. Oh, should I have stopped? You know that one of those ones?
Yeah.
Should I have stopped?
Yeah, but you know what?
Did he think I was being dismissive? Do I really care? No, I don't care.
You don't
then I
care.
Moved on. Yeah.
No. I think when you see someone you know, right, in the street,
yes,
and they just sort of go, but you've had a connection, often that's very satisfying.
I liked
it. Because you think, like, that would have been a bit of a pain, wouldn't it, to sort of stop.
I wasn't thinking that.
No, but I mean,
I'm thinking because we know each other so well, that's okay, we're fine, we can do that each other.
That's true. It was also raining.
It was also raining. And David and I, we started our friendship in a sauna.
Oh.
Yeah, we used to sauna regularly together.
At the place in Belsize Park?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were together, but we weren't together. So, you know, either you'd be in there and I'd join, or I'd be in there and you join. But obviously we didn't go to the gym together, but we used to see each other together. And it always went okay, I thought.
It was always lovely.
It was a nice exchange.
Ever tell you the story how...
Very complimentary to me.
Ever tell you, I was once, before my first child was born, my wife, Morwenna Banks, suggested a name for it, which I thought was too out there. Dolly, this is. Well, her name is Dolly. But she said, why don't we call this child Blue? Right? And I thought, that's too much. That's too showbiz. It's too Apple, right? Or whatever. But I don't know how to tell her that, because I don't like contradicting my wife. And then I was in the sauna in there, and a boy band came in, like four incredible-looking men making me feel like inferior, whatever. And they hadn't hit the world yet. And I said, oh, what are you? Are you a boy band? I said, yeah, we're a boy band. What are you called? And they were Blue. That's who they were. So I was able to say to my wife, we can't call her Blue.
So thank heaven for Blue.
Yeah, it's like calling her Boyzone. We can't do this.
Yeah, don't do that, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're still here, we're still chatting, and now we're chatting about your book, Only Children, Three Hilarious Short Stories. I've read the first one about Alfie and the mysterious older child carer.
Mrs. Stokes.
Childminder, Mrs. Stokes.
Yeah, yeah, babysitter. I call her a babysitter.
Magical powers.
Older child carer. Is that a new word?
But I think it's childminder. I don't know.
Yeah, I call her a babysitter.
Yeah, no, well, I think to me, I'll tell you why I said that, because to me, she's more than a babysitter. She has magical powers.
She's magical. She's magical. She's very much based on my babysitter when I was a kid, who was called Mrs. Stokes, who seemed 170 years old.
Right.
And whenever she came round and my dad left the house, he would always say, be good, or Mrs. Stokes will put the boot in. And that was always quite funny, because she could hardly walk. So that was good.
Was your dad a funny man?
My dad was a really funny man.
Really?
I mean, that was his saving grace, because he was quite an angry man. He was quite, you know, he was of that generation that wasn't loving towards their kids, really. But he was really funny.
Okay.
He was sort of loving in a sort of mainly slagging me off kind of way.
Yeah, and Alfie's dad, obviously Alfie's dad's remarried, because Alfie's mum passed away.
Yeah.
So he has a stepmum.
That's right.
And there's a regime and there's rituals in place.
Yeah.
And I think, where's this going? And I thought evil stepmum straight away, but it's not the case at all. It's gorgeous.
I don't tend to have villains, actually, obvious villains in my books.
Too many villains in the world.
I don't do that. I'm a bit frightened by villains.
Yes.
And someone once told me that their child likes my books because they don't tend to have, like, really really creepy villains in them,
right,
so they don't get frightened.
Okay.
Yeah, but I did, bad things happen, like people overcome them, but not necessarily throughout. So no, I don't, evil stepmother.
So
no,
book
no.
one I've done story one in the book. So we have three stories for the price of one book.
Story two was originally written for Virgin Trade. So I should say, two of these stories I did write before, they came out in different forms.
I see.
Number one, the one you've just read, The Boy Who Could Do What He Liked.
Yes.
And by the
in
way,
the end.
I should say that what she says, Mrs. Stokes, continually is, oh, just
do what you like.
And he said, all right, I'll do what I like. And then suddenly he can really do what he likes. And that's the premise of that story.
Yeah.
I wrote that for World Book Day as a short story about 10 years ago. Second one, which is The Girl Who'd Never Been on a Train, I wrote actually, and I can say this on here, for Virgin Trains, a thing that they had where you would have an iPad given to you in, I think, first class, and it would have a kid's story on it not available anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's about a disabled girl who loves trains but finds it a bit difficult to get on trains. She gets on one eventually, and then it magically transforms into an old-style steam train, and that's her dream come true, except then it's going to crash, and she has to save the day. Not going to tell you what happens. And the third one, which I've written very recently,
yes,
and which I really enjoy writing, is about basically when I used to go on holiday.
Right.
I used to go on holiday every year to Swansea, every year without fail. Never went anywhere.
Where?
Swansea,
okay.
Yeah. Now, I should apologise to anyone listening from Swansea, because I've made that in this story into snoring on sea. And that's because the story is set in 1978. And I promise you, now I've been to Swansea, it's brilliant. But in 1978, going there every year without fail, and my parents never going anywhere apart from basically our B&B and Martin and Norma's caravan, that's the only places that we went.
Right.
It was snoring on sea.
Why did they go to Swansea every year?
Because my dad's from Swansea, and that's where his parents were.
Oh, I see.
And we went and saw his parents and their mates, Martin and Norma, in their caravan in the Mumbles. That was it. I didn't even know then, because I went back later, that if you go to, say, Three Cliffs Bay and the Gower Peninsula, it's beautiful.
It's
amazing. Yeah, we didn't go there because my parents couldn't be bothered.
No, the Gower's like, they say that God practiced, you know, everywhere else for 6 days, then he made the Gower.
Yeah, I promise you, it's beautiful. Not so beautiful in Swansea in 1978. Right. But they go to Snoring-on-Sea, and then these three kids who are really bored meet a kind of sprite on an island, like on a rock outcrop in the sea, and they bring him back to their world, and he thinks their world is magical and amazing. He says, look at this caravan. It's like a chariot on
wheels.
Grass
is always greener.
Grass is always greener, yeah. And he loves the fact that they have fried food every day. He loves the fact they've got a crack window in their bedroom because he can see a dinosaur in it. And he tells them that their life is, in fact, magical. And that's what I wanted when I was a kid, because that didn't happen to me.
The third story is, I mean, Mary's favourite story is the third story.
Yeah.
Okay, but what did she think of the rest of the book? Okay, here we go.
Here we go. I'm always waiting for this review.
An eight-year-old's profound review. Here we go. This is Mary's review of David's brand new book, Only Children, Three Hilarious Short Stories by David Deal, million copy best-selling author.
It's a great book because you think there are just going to be short stories and not much will happen. Like, you think Chrissy's just going to get on a train and that is the most exciting part. But then the train goes back in time. My favourite story is the child who had never been on holiday, because it's really funny. Like, with wallpaper that looks like poo.
All leads back to poo.
She did actually say, and it also makes you think, but we thought we'd cut the review at poo.
Okay,
fair. When you say we,
Jane. Aussie Jane.
Now, that is funny, but actually the wallpaper that looks like poo, that's part of it, in that when Ariel, which is a reference to The Tempest by Shakespeare.
Nice.
When Ariel appears in their grandparents' house, the one thing he doesn't make magical is that smear. That looks like poo. That's the one thing he doesn't say, oh, that's nice. So there you go. It's good
it's
that she picked up on that.
It's the exception that poo's the rule.
Yeah. David... Thank you, Mary, by the way. Has Mary ever grown older? Because I've been coming here for, it feels like, about a decade, and she's been doing reviews, and she always seems the same age.
What she does is she puts on her review voice.
Right.
Because, yeah, like, if you hear her
she's
speaking
actually
out,
27.
Yeah, it's all right, David.
Sorry about the gunners at the moment. That all went a bit poo-shaped, didn't it?
Now, you love her, obviously, but I love her because she's really been almost 100% positive about my books over
the years.
What
do you mean almost?
No, I think totally.
Yeah, she's been totally. She really genuinely loves it.
I just
By
put
the way,
almost
she's
in.
Only eight, and she read the whole of your book before any of us had read it. I mean, her mum went to Oxford studying literature.
Yeah.
So that's obviously...
Well, that might be where she gets it.
Okay. Can your wife review my book as well? Because, you know...
Oh,
can I just say something about it as well?
Sir.
So it's called Only Children, Three Hilarious Short Stories. Uh-huh. I didn't know it was called that. Right. Like, I wrote a book called Only Children. It was just three short stories. When I got the cover back, basically HarperCollins had written three hilarious short stories.
They have to.
No, but I thought, oh, they've got a quote. Yeah, but no, that's the title. They decided that was the title of the book.
Oh, no, that's fine, though. Why
is
not?
That, well, because I kind of think, is it for us to say that?
Yeah, but you're not saying it. They're saying it.
They're saying it.
They pay you.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And that's okay. That's how it works.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay.
Don't sweat it.
I think Mary has now said it's true.
But also, you know, when you see your name and another children's book, and you've sold that, now you're in the millions of sales, so congratulations.
Thank you.
When it says only children, three hilarious short stories, you go, yeah, probably.
Probably is. Yeah, why not?
I didn't question it, did you?
Yeah, yep. Only I questioned it,
yeah,
which is weird.
And now you're...
It's like I said almost, and I didn't have to, about her giving me good
talking, reviews. We were talking before about the Barbara Streisand effect, which you hadn't heard of.
No.
What is that?
The Barbara Streisand effect. So what happened was, in 1990 late something, Barbara Streisand house, a picture of Barbara Streisand's house was put on the internet.
Right.
So she did what she'd always done, for, you know, privacy, and she sort of threatened everybody with various lawsuits and things like that. But because it's on the internet and out there, the people who first posted it said, oh, fair enough, we don't want to go to jail, and Barbara Streisand's probably got enough money to send us to jail. If this is how it went, by the way, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like this. But it was already out there, and then the more it was reported that she didn't want anyone to look at these photos, because it's on the internet, of course, then, you know, 1,000x more people looked at these photographs. It's called the Barbara Streisand effect. And the thing about...
How does that relate to what we've been talking about?
I'll tell you why, because the speeches are at the BAFTAs,
yeah,
that were cut by the BBC have now been reported as being cut. And so more people have probably watched them that would be watching TV on Sunday night. So the people who made the speeches have done their job in making the speech and getting their point across. And the thing is, the bit you weren't worried about, none of us cared about, until you highlighted it in your own radio version of the Barbara Streisand effect.
I see.
And that's where I was getting to.
I see. So now more people have taken note of the fact that my stories are hilarious.
Well, no, they'll be now checking to make sure they are hilarious
that's
before
fine.
Writing to HarperCollins.
Complaining. Yeah. Three hilarious short stories.
Yeah.
That's that. I'm going with it.
I think
Barbara.
I'm there. I was there already. I was on board. I was on the top deck of the bus. We were talking today about the fact that Vassos's son, who's 17,
right,
Matthew, wants to be on Taskmaster.
Okay.
But we've only just had he's been banging on about this for a couple of years, but I said, it's time, Vassos, that we tell your son that he needs to be a comedian to get on Taskmaster. So the first thing to do is become a comedian.
You do have to do that, as far as I have never had not a comedian on it.
Well, the specials they do. But...
Do they? Okay. But, I mean, you do have to be a comedian, although...
Yes.
There's no reason why they couldn't do one with not comedians. In fact, it could be really funny to
but
have very serious room. People doing it,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
That would
although
be,
that's
that
not
would
your
hilarious.
Son either, but it would be funny.
That could be a special.
Yeah.
The So Not Comedians version of Taskmaster.
Yeah.
But this got us back to open mic nights and, you know, being funny in the first place and, you know, fearing the wisdom of the crowd, as it were, or the acceptance of the crowd. But I was explaining that on open mic nights, you know, in pubs on a Monday night, most of it isn't funny and the crowd know that, and so that's okay, and that's where you begin to learn to be funny.
Yeah.
Tell us
Well, the key thing about, like, being a comedian who then gets somewhere is that you notice something straight away. So when, especially in this country, it's a bit different when I've done stand-up in America.
Yes.
But in this country, which is very British, is that you go on stage and you're not known, and there's a real sense of make us laugh. Come on, then, you're probably not funny, are you? And you have to get over that. And it's very intimidating, I have to say. Once you get well known, it's a real difference. People are coming to see you.
Yeah, so they're invested in it.
Yeah, and when they're coming to you, you have to be quite bad to get that sense of like, oh, whatever. Because that's no longer the default.
Well, because they have confirmation bias.
They have confirmation bias. They've paid for the tickets.
Yeah.
But at a
they
club,
don't want to be wrong with
they
their
don't
vote.
Want to be wrong. But a club night, and the other bad place is if anyone's ever done a corporate gig. So that can be bad even when you're well known. So if you've done a corporate gig, right, and the people there, the bankers, whoever, this has happened to me, and I can't tell this story because it involves a lot of swearing, but you can imagine. I have done gigs where I've turned up and they're a bit drunk and they're a bit annoyed, and you can hear them thinking to themselves, as soon as I came on, couldn't they afford
never
Frank Skinner?
Basically,
you know, never liked him. And every comedian's felt this. And then you have to really fight to get it. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you just think, right, this is a wash. I just have to basically get through this. Actually, sometimes it can be fun. I did a gig in Australia once, a corporate, and it was the most drunk gig I've ever had. It was this drunk because, can I say this? It was been organised by Foster's, right?
Yeah.
And they had based on a thing whereby you collected beer labels, you sent them off to them, 200 beer labels you had to get, and if you they went into a draw, you then got a holiday in Australia. So yes. These are already very drunk people. Yes. I was the entertainment at the end of their holiday. Can you imagine how drunk
they got drunk
was?
To win the competition.
They got drunk to win the competition.
And they just carried on.
Then they went to Australia, not a non-drinking place. Then they had a party at the end in Sydney, and then I came on.
And you were the crock of gold.
I'll tell you what it was.
Or the crock of something.
It was less like comedy and more like close-up crowd control. Because I ended up going around each table
Brilliant.
And just trying to deal with each one. But actually, that was a real laugh. That wasn't a bad corporate.
Good for you.
Nice time.
Fun. So we touched on this last time you came in, but I can't ever stop thinking about this, about, you know, because there are big comedy tours on at the moment. There are more being announced. And every time you hear a podcast, somebody's in the middle of one. It's all amazing. Joe Rogan's just relocated to Texas. He's taken hold of the comedy store with him. And right. All the people who used to work there now work for him. And he's got this new sort of comedy magnet around Texas. And it's Austin. It sounds so exciting. When you and Rob Newman announced those first arena tours at Wembley, those arena gigs at Wembley.
Well, we did tour. We toured arenas
I know
as well.
I know you toured. But when you first announced the fact you were going to do comedy in a 10,000-seater venue, we were like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Can you just take us through the decision tree there, the process, you know, when you thought about that, why you thought about that, the risk that came with that, the fact that you were so punk at the time. Were you fearless? Were you fearful? More, please.
Okay. So, the year before,
yes,
me and Rob Newman, had done Hammersmith Odeon, as it was then, now the Eventim Apollo, which, by the way, sounds much less rock and roll. We'd done the Hammersmith Odeon 9 times in a row. Mm-hmm. And that had been brilliant, but I think there was a feeling of, like, how can we take this a bit further? And no one had done an arena gig, and everyone had been going
in the world?
No, I think in America they had.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think, people in America, I think, had.
I'm not sure,
like
but
Steve
maybe.
Martin had, I think, and maybe some of those, Andrew Dice Clay and people like that.
Right.
But no one in Britain had. And still in Britain, I think, until, like, essentially Newman and Bill and a few other people appeared, I think comedy was seen as a sort of, mainly political, quite serious, in a way, thing. It didn't have the... I'm going to say sexiness. Can you believe it? At my age, but I'm going to say sort of sexiness of maybe other art forms, and that was the comedy as the new rock and roll thing, right?
Yeah.
So to become that archetype, I guess. What do you do if you're a rock and roll band? Right? You go from playing small venues to playing arenas. So I guess the idea was let's try it. And I'll be honest with you, that gig, which I've got somewhere, got the video of, possibly on VHS. I don't think it was our best comedy gig, right? Because it was massive, it was in the round, which was kind of a weird idea, and it was just like the feeling of it was too intense for just laughter, right? But as an event, it was totally amazing. It just felt
amazing. So that's the difference
amazing.
Then. It became an event.
Yeah, it's more of an event
than
a theatre show.
That's
like,
the answer.
It's not like just a theatre thing
that's
where
it.
You go and see something and you enjoy it and you're like, it felt like this is a thing. You know, this is, an event, a happening.
What did you think straight after the gig?
I was really pleased it was over because it was very terrifying. I also thought, which is a separate point, that's it for me and Rob Newman, which it was. We never worked together again. And that was good. There was also a slight problem.
That was good.
Well, no, it was good because at that point our relationship was falling apart.
Right.
And the other thing was that I also had had a new woman in my life, and she was great, but my ex-girlfriend turned up to the gig, and so I had to deal with that because that was complicated as well.
Yeah,
so
when
these are very specific points to
I
me.
I like it. Thanks for being so candid. I really appreciate
I'm always candid. You
I wasn't hoping
that.
For this much, but you're over-delivering here.
You know this
it's
about
so
me.
It's so cool,
I
man.
Am over-honest. I can't help myself.
And of course the team, most of the team not in here but in the control room and outside in the office, they don't even know you did all that stuff because before they were born or were watching comedy.
Yeah.
So half the team weren't born when you did that gig. Seriously.
Yeah.
And
now, I did it. Someone took a profile of me for the New Statesman, right? And they came to interview me and they are 24, this journalist. And they're talking to me about stuff I did in the late 80s, early 90s. And I'm thinking, you weren't born. So this is really weird because I just have to try and convey it to you. You don't
Which
have any
so
sense
so
of the experience
to
of
do,
that.
Man.
No, it's weird. But we were talking about this before we came on air. We are quite old. Well, how old are you? I can't remember.
57.
Right, I'm 58. I'm be 59 in 2 weeks.
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
And I was nearly late today because the traffic was bad, and we discussed why didn't you come by tube. And I said, well, it'd be really packed and I can't sit down. And Chris said, someone would give up their seat for you. And it's happened to you, apparently.
Happened to me 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's like, it's my version of my wife being ID'd for alcohol, which also happened 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
But that's a really sunny story. And mine's a sort of wooden porch, rocking chair, alfalfa, white picket fence story.
Isn't it the most double-edged thing in the world? Because I am old, so therefore I do think I'd like to sit down.
Yep.
At the same time, if someone looks at me and think, oh dear, I better offer up my seat for that guy, that is not so good.
Yeah, but do you know what's great at our age? Because you've got to focus on the positive here,
yeah.
Right? What we can do the double seat give up.
Double seat give up?
Yeah, so somebody offers us their seat because we are older and we look old, right?
Yeah.
Than they do.
Than they do.
And also
yeah.
to them, we look really old.
Yeah.
Right.
No, so if it's a 20-year-old offering a seat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. With, you know, anything with big hair, any species with big hair.
Yeah.
But then we sit in it.
Yeah.
And because we're not yet 60, somebody else gets on, we do the double. We then say, in a very lovely, excuse me, would you like a seat?
Yeah.
In as much as, yes, okay, we get that. But there's also
the pregnant woman option.
Oh, well, you've got to be careful there.
Yes, that's true. That has
happened
to me.
You'd be very careful.
That has happened to me. I once said congratulations to a woman, and she said, for what? And that is very, very bad situation.
So what did you say with your razor?
No, because I'm incredibly honest. I said, I'm sorry, I thought you were pregnant. But actually, what could I have said? Oh, I just heard you won the lottery. Like, you can't. There is nowhere to go with congratulations.
That would have been funny. And she said, no, oh, it must be somebody else.
Either way, yes.
Check your ticket.
You can, if you want, show that you're a really good person.
Yes.
If you're old, I never thought about this. You give it your seat, you're sitting down, you're taking a seat that's been given up, and then you give it out for someone else. That is very, very nice of you.
Double give up.
Yeah, double seat give up.
Right, you're great. I love you.
I love you too.
You're always welcome back. It doesn't matter how many shows you've gone before you come on ours, it's fine.
Thank you. I've given you this book, by the way. I'm mentioning it, The God Desires, my other book, and I want you to read it because I think it will speak to you.
I'm going to read it. And what I was going to say off the air, because now we're over time because you're banging on still.
Sorry.
I was going to read it. If you want to come back and talk about it, come. But now I'm going to rescind that because you've now made us run into Eddie Temple Morris' show.
I'm
we
sorry.
Do it far too often. So you can stick your God Desire where the sun don't shine. No, I will read it.
Bob Streisand effect.
Okay, yeah, good. David Deal, The God Desire. Also, lighter reading, I think. I don't know. I've not read the second book. Only Children, Three Hilarious. Like flipping hilarious. Your achingly hilarious stories by David Baddiel. No pressure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
It's a joy.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vassos. See you tomorrow. 6:30. Don't be late.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.